Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 121 for December 2nd, 2007. Coming up in a few minutes.
There were just some really fabulous whiskeys entered into the awards this year.
That's Davin DeCergamo, one of the coordinators for this year's Malt Maniacs Whiskey Awards. The white puffs of smoke have risen from a small Alsatian town in eastern France, and the winners are in. The details in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. If you're an Isle of Jura fan, you might want to sock away a bottle or two of the Jura 21-year-old. Richard Patterson of White & Mackay advises the 21-year-old is being phased out in favor of an 18-year-old Jura. The reason? Demand for older whiskeys is heavy among all distilleries these days, and White & Mackay needs to keep some of the older Jura available for use in the superstition expression, which carries no age statement but does use some of Jura's 21-year-old casks. The U.S. is about to get a taste of Chieftain's Choice single malts. Ian McLeod Distillers has signed a deal to export its Chieftain's bottlings to the U.S. McLeod's Roderick McKenzie explains.
Chieftains have not been in the States before, and we've got an interesting lineup of about a dozen single casks coming into the U.S. market, and we hope that'll be the first of many.
The highlights of the collection include a 30-year-old malt from Alta Bain and a 25-year-old Port Ellen, along with a 39-year-old Springbank distilled back in 1968. New York's first spirits auction since Prohibition is this coming Saturday at Christie's, but there's already some controversy. The auction catalog includes a bottle of Macallan claimed to be from 1856. Now, I say claimed because there have been a number of fake Macallans from that year that have turned up at auctions in recent years. Justin Christoph of Christie's responded to my email questions about this specific bottle. He's pulling it from the auction until more research can be done to confirm it as authentic. Now, how can you tell? Well, Malt Maniac and Professor Lex Krajewelt passed along some details on that. It turns out that carbon dating on some of the fake Macallans has turned up radioactive elements that didn't widely exist until at least 1945. That's when atomic weapons testing and the U.S. attacks on Japan started releasing those elements into the atmosphere. More nuclear testing by the Soviets and other countries helped spread traces of those elements worldwide, where they now exist in tiny amounts in the water and soil. In other words, if those elements show up in a bottle of whiskey, there's no way it could have been made before at least 1945, let alone back in 1856. Now, being able to get information like that quickly is one of the benefits of being part of a whiskey community, and there's a new one going online this very weekend. The Whiskey Channel is the brainchild of whiskey author Ian Buxton.
We're going to include what people want to include. It's all about user-generated content, to use the current buzzwords, but I hope there's going to be a lot there about everything people are thinking and talking about whiskey at any given time. So we've set up some initial categories to encourage people to post and blog, and that's everything from whiskey books to whiskey festivals and about a dozen things in between. And we hope people are going to talk about distilleries they've visited, great bars that they like, their own tasting notes, the visitor centers they've been to. There'll be whiskey news, a lot about history and heritage, all of the things that people like to talk about and share. So we hope it'll become what people want to make it.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. How is this going to differ from all the other whiskey websites that are out there?
Well, first of all, it's really genuinely user-generated. A lot of the sites that are out there that are sharing information about brands or distilleries are really great and they're valuable, but all the information in them has been generated by the proprietor, by the distiller or the brand owner or whatever. So it's just their view of the world. And there's very little chance for you to interact with it. Secondly, this is the first site that really starts to build a community. And you can post on this as a friend. You can find friends. You can share information with friends. And thirdly, we've introduced a technology that allows you to post video. And I think that's the first time anyone's done that for whiskey in terms of user-generated content as opposed to what the distiller or the brand owner wants you to see. So if you have a great whiskey bar that you want to review, if you've done some tasting notes, if you've got a fabulous collection of whiskey or of collectibles, shoot a little piece of video about that and share it in this community, and that will be unique.
Continuing on the devil's advocate theme, while this is different from the distillery sites, there are a number of other forums out there for whiskey chat, discussion, sharing, things like that. So I'm just curious what the potential is for what some would describe as another whiskey website.
Well, it's another whiskey website, but it's a whiskey website with bells and whistles. I don't think there are many sites that allow you to build the community in the way that we hope that this will build, so that people can talk about themselves as well and share that with their friends. Also, we're putting up what I think is pretty exclusive. It's a rolling news feed from Just Drinks, who are a major provider of news and information to the industry, which will be filtered just to show whiskey information. So you'll be able to see all the press releases and so forth from the distillers, all the new information about brands, etc., in real time, just as the news agencies see it. And that, I think, is going to be a first, as well as the capacity to put up your own video, as well as the capacity to find your friends in our community.
You can check it out at thewhiskeychannel.com, and there's a link from the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society has Christmas Scotch tastings scheduled for this coming Thursday in Glasgow, December 11th in Edinburgh, and the 12th in Leith. In addition to the Christie's auction next Saturday, McTeers in Glasgow will hold an auction of rare whiskies on December 13th. Finally, if you have a Hogmanay celebration or a Burns supper you'd like to add to the calendar, email me. The address is comments@whiskeycast.com. That's the calendar of events for this episode, brought to you by Laphroaig, on the web at laphroaig.com. As I mentioned at the start of this episode, many of the Malt Maniacs are gathered in Turckheim, France this weekend. That's where the winners of this year's Malt Maniacs Whiskey Awards were announced on Saturday. For the past few weeks, 12 members of the Maniacs have been rating 180 different whiskies from around the world. The results are in, and I was able to pull Maniac Davin de Kergamo away from the party to give us the results.
Well, the overall winners of the Malt Maniacs Awards this year, we had two, one the for a premium bottling, the other for a more affordable bottling. The Non Plus Ultra Award went to the Laphroaig 27-year-old, that's an official bottling, distilled in 1980 and bottled in 2007. That's for the an ultra premium bottling, and it's the overall top scoring whiskey out of all of the 2007 Malt Maniac Awards entries. Among the more affordable bottlings, the Non Plus Ultra Award went to the Lagavulin 1990 Distillers Edition, which is an official bottling from Lagavulin. That again is the overall top scoring affordable whiskey in the Malt Maniacs Award this year. When we look at the other affordable bottlings, start with the Aberlour Abuna Batch Number 20, which is the Supreme Sherry Cask Award. The best whiskey matured exclusively in cherry casks. A really, truly outstanding whiskey, that Aberlour. And then we go to the Supreme Warped Cask Award. And, of course, Johannes, from his warped mind comes the idea of a warped cask award. It's the best whiskey matured or finished in special casks, and that's the Hanyu 1998-2007, which is a Japanese whiskey, and it's finished actually in Japanese oak. And Oak was telling me that there are some special flavors that come from the Japanese oak. We also have the Supreme Peated Malt Award, which is the best whiskey distilled from peated malt. And that's we don't know the name of the distillery. It's called Isla 1998-2007 from the Celtic Whiskey Company. The Gentle Giant Award goes to the best unpeated, unsherried, and unfinished whiskey. And that goes to the Yamazaki 15-year-old, which is a cask strength official bottling from Yamazaki. The NAS Coffee Award, which we give for the best single grain, was not awarded this year. We didn't have an affordable single grain whiskey, which we felt was worthy of that award. But when you go to the ultra premium bottlings, and some of these are pretty expensive, we have a Supreme Sherry Cask Award going to the Glen Grant 36-year-old. It's distilled in 1970 and bottled in 2006 from Blackadder. Again, a truly outstanding whiskey, and that's one of the ones that was really hot on the heels of that Lefroy. Darn near beat it, but not quite. The Supreme Bourbon Cask Award, among the ultra premium bottlings, best whiskey matured exclusively in bourbon casks, went to the Ben React 30-year-old, which was distilled in 1976 and bottled in 2007. That's an official bottling for the Nectar from Belgium. Supreme Warped Cask Award, among ultra premium bottlings, best whiskey matured or finished in special casks, went to the Nika Yuichi 18-year-old. That's a Japanese whiskey distilled in 1987 and bottled in 2006 at the cask strength. It's from a Madeira cask. The Supreme Peated Malt Award, which is the best whiskey distilled from peated malt, among the ultra premiums, went to the Kalila 32-year-old. That's distilled in 1975 and bottled in 2007 from Signatory. Again, another truly outstanding whiskey. There were just some really fabulous whiskeys entered into the awards this year. Another one, of course, being the Gentle Giant Award, which was given for the best unpeated, unsherried, and unfinished whiskey in among the ultra-premium bottlings. That went to a Lochside 40-year-old. Lochside 40-year-old, distilled in 1966 and bottled in 2007, again from Signatory. Again, a truly outstanding whiskey. And finally, the NAS Coffee Award for the best single-grain whiskey. Among the ultra-premium bottlings, in fact, the best single-grain overall was a Carsbridge 27-year-old. That was distilled in 1979 and bottled in 2006, and it was bottled by Duncan Taylor. So that's those are the top winners. We also have Carriages. I'm not sure what you say that. Vintage 81-2007, which is the top Japanese whiskey. And the Tyrconnell 10-year-old sherry finish, and that's a bit of a surprise to me, but this Tyrconnell 10-year-old sherry finish was the top Irish whiskey for 2007. So those are really the top winners. There were 10 gold medal winners and quite a number of silver and bronze medal winners, which are all listed on the Whiskey Fund site. I don't know if we need to go through those or not.
Now, let's not go through those. Those are available at the Whiskey Fund website. There's a link, of course, at the Whiskey Cast website. But it seems as though the distilleries and the bottlers really go all out for this competition. They enter some of the best things they can get their hands on, right?
The distilleries really seem to take this competition very seriously, and they really enter their very, very best whiskeys. We restrict them. They're allowed only to enter three whiskeys each, or each distillery or distributor can enter up to three whiskeys. So they really seem to separate the wheat from the chaff. They send the really good stuff, and it was just amazing the quality of the whiskeys that were entered. Well, every year it's been good whiskey, but this year there were some truly outstanding whiskeys entered in the competition. Each year, I think it gets better and better and better, and the competition becomes stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. But it's kind of nice to see an official bottling win this year. Both the Lefroy and the Lagavulin are both official bottlings. In the past, I think the independents have really sort of dominated the competition. But the official bottlings, those distilleries are starting to take the competition really, really seriously, and they send their very best stuff. So, yeah, it's quite a job separating them out. And as you can see when you go to Whiskey Fun, you'll see that there are an awful lot of silver and gold and bronze medal winners.
Now, since you were one of the judges,
yeah,
Davin, and you had to go through these 180 different whiskeys, tell me how you went through the process.
Well, it's not as easy as it might sound. First of all, I divided them into flights of six whiskeys and taste the six whiskeys one after another and come up with scores. But then, of course, you have to rest. You have to rest your palate. So generally try to do about six whiskeys per day. on the weekend, probably do, you know, maybe 18 whiskeys in a day, but a lot of time between flights so that your palate stays rested. I generally try to compare them to a whiskey that I know really, really well so that I can be good on the scores. And when I'm going through the first time, I make careful notes of the nose and careful notes of the palate and any special comments I might have. And then I do give a score to that whiskey. The score between 0 and 100. The lowest score I gave this year was 45. And I think the highest I gave this year was 95, which went to the Glen Grant, I might add. And then once that is done, then I go through them a second time. The second time through, comparing whiskeys that have the same score so that you can get the little nuances and see, well, maybe this one should go up a little bit, maybe this one should go down a little bit. And then on the second time through, try to come up with a final score if I can, and also, you know, add any additional comments that I might want to make about the whiskey itself. Then once I've gone through that and I've got my winners, then I get really nervous and insecure and go look at the top, you know, 8 or 10 whiskeys again and taste them over and over and over until I'm sure that I've got the scores right and got the numbers right. The other thing I do is when there are some that are sort of on the border, does this get a bronze medal or not, then I'll taste those. So I taste all those ones that have a score of, say, 79, 78, taste them over again to make sure that I haven't unfairly kept them out of the medals. And the same at the border between the gold and the silver, and between the silver and the bronze, so that I can really make sure. So there's a third, sometimes a fourth tasting to make sure that you really have given every whiskey, every opportunity it has to demonstrate itself. But the tasting goes on slowly, so that you can really appreciate the nose, really appreciate the flavors, and I'm try to be quite careful to make sure that when I put my scores in, that they really reflect a studied opinion of the whiskey. And it's really rewarding though when you do that and see how the other judges have very similar comments and very similar scores. And especially among the gold medalists, there really wasn't a whole lot of discussion. Those we had quite a lot of consensus on what the good ones were and on what some of maybe the lesser whiskeys were as well.
And of course, you're doing all these tastings blind, so you don't know which one you're tasting at the time.
That's right. We get 180 numbered bottles. We have no idea what's in the bottles. We taste those. We do our notes. We do our scoring. Everything. Without knowing what whiskeys were submitted, without knowing what we're tasting. Only after we have submitted our scores are we allowed to know what we have tasted. And sometimes that's kind of surprising, and sometimes even a little bit embarrassing, that a whiskey that you might not have thought was so great, might not have had said was not so great, turns out when tasted blind, scores pretty well. And also, some surprises at the other end as well. But, it's 100% blind. We don't know what we're tasting, and we don't know what we're scoring. And everything we do is done based on what's in the glass and nothing else, no label or influence at all.
And I should note there's a lot of noise behind you, because I know that most of the maniacs have gathered in Alsace for the weekend for the awards, correct?
We have quite a representation here, yes. And we're all sort of sitting down at the table here and drinking good whiskey, drinking really good wine, and eating Alsatian specialties. And, it's quite an event.
And I wish I was there.
Mark, we wish you were here as well.
I should note that as a member of the Maniacs, I was supposed to have been one of the judges for this year's competition. However, United States Customs regulations made it impossible to get a set of numbered samples shipped over from Europe. Rest assured, work's already underway on a solution to that little problem for next year. You can find a complete list of winners at Serge Valentin's Whiskey Fun website. It's whiskeyfun.com. And that's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. You can find links to the stories in this episode, the calendar of events, and the online store at the Whiskey Cast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2007, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie. reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.